Thanks for joining us. You can always catch the latest sermon online, but we sure would love to see you join us in person to celebrate and support each other in our love for God, our neighbors, and this church. We are South Britain Congregational Church. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. And now, enjoy another great Sunday sermon, and we hope to see you soon.
The gospel reading today is Luke 6, 27 through 38. You're going to hear a lot of familiar sounds in this passage. The word of God for the people of God. But to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that? Even sinners love people who love them. And if you do good for those who are good to you, what credit is that? Even sinners do good to people that do good to them. And if you lend to those whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to others, expecting to be paid in full. But love your enemies. Do good to them. And lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great. And you will be children of the Most High, because he is kind and grateful and ungrateful to the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Amen. I love writing sermons. You know, I don't have the gift of being able to stand up and give a talk without learning it or reading it. Everything I've ever done, I've written hundreds and hundreds of sermons, and all of them are written down. I don't always follow them word for word, but they're always written down. Today the sermon is about kindness. It's called Try It. You'll like it. And when I preach, I have a little system that I like to put in place. I want to tell you a couple of fun stories. Now, these stories are meant to be funny, so it's okay to laugh. That doesn't mean you have to, but I want to give you a little insight of where I grew up. I had an Uncle Ralph who lived in a white house with a porch running almost all around the house on Ice Pond Road in East Arlington, Vermont. Now, Ralph used to like to sit in a rocking chair, chew tobacco, and drink his Ballantine ale, and look at what was happening around him. Now, Ice Pond Road was a dirt road, so there wasn't a lot of traffic, but Ralph didn't mind. The only traffic, practically, we got were out-of-towners, tourists who come and gawk at us backward folks, and to look at the mountains in Vermont. And we called them Flatlanders. So the Flatlanders would come and drive down the road, and we'd wave at them and pretend that we were not very bright. But anyway, Ralph was kind of cantankerous. He didn't like Flatlanders, so he didn't have much patience with them. Anyway, one day, Ralph's sitting there in his rocker, and a Flatlander came up and rolled the window down, and he said, "Can I take this road to Manchester?" Ralph said, "Nope, road stays here." The flatlander said, no. He said, if I drive down this road, will I get to Manchester? Ralph said, I don't know how good a driver you are, but I don't think you're good enough. The flatlander was getting a little impatient, and he said, look, can I take this road to Manchester? Ralph said, I don't think I'll fit in your car. Flatlander said, you don't know nothing, do you? Ralph says, I know I ain't lost. Flatlander's rolling up his window and he says, there ain't not much between you and a fool. Ralph said, nope, just the front lawn and the picket fence. I also had an Uncle Glossy. Now, Uncle Glossy, that's his real name. I don't know where the Glossy ever came from. It's the only person I ever heard of that name. Now, Uncle Glossy had a chicken farm. And it was on Route 7, just north of town. Now, Route 7 is the same Route 7 it's always been. It goes from Norwalk, Connecticut to Montreal. It's right straight north. So Ralph had this chicken farm, and Route 7 was a major highway. And the people would speed along 7, and Ralph was losing chickens, getting hit by cars all the time. So we didn't have any police in that little town of ours. So Ralph said, well, it's a state highway, so he would call the state police and see if they could do something about it. So he called Captain Maynard up in Manchester, and he said, Maynard, can you help me out? I'm losing chickens with these people speeding on the road. And Maynard said, sure, we'll take care of it. So a week or two later, they come and they put a sign up that said, caution. And a week later, Glossy called up Maynard and he says, you know, I think that caution sign will make them drive faster. I'm losing more chickens than I ever did. So Maynard says, okay, let me see what I can do. So 2 weeks later, DOT comes by and they put up a sign that says, caution, children at play. A week later, Glossy called him up and said, it's not working. Would you mind if I put up my own sign? And Maynard said, sure, go ahead, put up your own sign. So about a month goes by, and Maynard said to one of his deputies, have you heard anything from Glossy about the chickens? The deputy said, no, I haven't heard a word. It's been a month. So he said, well, why don't you go up and see what he's done? So the deputy drove up, and he called the captain back, and he said, yep, Glossy bought a sheet of plywood, and he painted a sign, and he put it up just at the beginning of his property. And the captain said, well, what's the sign say? It said, caution, nudist colony. He hasn't lost a chicken since. Now that we've had a little fun, let's do the sermon. The sermon is about kindness. You know, friends, when I was 12 years old, I was a Boy Scout. And I had achieved the rank of second-class Boy Scout. Now, the symbol of a second-class Boy Scout is a ribbon. And hanging from the middle of the ribbon is a knot, a piece of rope with a knot on it. That piece of rope signifies do a good turn daily. In other words, do a good deed every day. That's the Boy Scout slogan, and that's what they try to teach the young boys and Boy Scouts. And I fell hard. Boy, I wanted to be the best Boy Scout anybody could be, and I had racking my 12-year-old brain of what can I do to do a good deed. And I looked in the Boy Scout manual, and there was a picture of a Boy Scout helping an old lady across the street. I said, that's it. That's what I'll do. But we had a problem. It was a little teeny tiny town. There was no sidewalks. There was no stoplights. The streets weren't even paved. And there were no old ladies looking across the street. But I remembered that my mother and my sisters would go school shopping in Bennington. Now, Bennington was like New York City to us. There were stores, there were stoplights, there were streetlights, there were sidewalks, there were crosswalks. And I begged my mother, I said, please let me go with you when you go school shopping, and I'll find an old lady that I can help cross the street. True story, by the way. So my mother and sisters were school shopping, and I went down on the corner of Route 7 and Main Street to wait for an old lady to come so I could help her across the street. And I was there for an hour or more. Nobody came. This young lady came up to me, and she said, "Hi, I see you walking back and forth. Is there something I could help you with?" She worked at the bank across the street, and she had seen me there. And I said, "Well, I'm waiting for an old lady to come so I can help her cross the street." And she said, "Well, I'm not an old lady, but I would be honored if you would help me cross the street." So she let me cross. Actually, she walked me across the street. But she helped me by letting me walk her across the street. And she gave me a kiss on the forehead and thanked me for helping her. What that woman did was that she instilled in me an appreciation for an act of kindness. All she did was help a 12-year-old boy who was trying to do something good fulfill his wish to do something good. She was a delight. And that memory of that act of kindness stays with me today. That woman never realized the impact that she had. You know, I have the honor of being a pen pal. I'm going to have Marseille come up here. Marseille is no relative of mine. She's my friend, and she's my pen pal. And if any of you want to have experienced the delights in life, find a youngster that you can be a pen pal with. I have children and grandchildren that have a wonderful relationship, but a pen pal is something different. It's something special. And Marseille, would you come up? I want to have Marseille read to you another story of kindness. Okay?
In Brooklyn, New York, Trush is a school that caters to learning disabled children. Some children remain in Trush their entire school career, while others can be mainstreamed into conventional schools. At a Trush fundraising dinner, the father of a Trush child delivered a speech that would never be forgotten by all who attended. After extolling the school and its dedicated staff, he cried out, "Where is the perfected in my son, Shia? Everything God does is done with perfection, but my child cannot understand things as others' children can. My child cannot remember facts and figures as other children do. Where is God's perfection?" The audience was shocked by the question, pained by the father's anguish, stilled by the piercing query. "I believe," the father answered, "that when God brings a child like this into the world, the perfection that he seeks is in the way people react to this child." He then told the following story about his son, Shia. One afternoon, Shia and his father walked past the park where some boys were playing baseball. Shia asked, "Do you think they will let me play?" Shia's father knew that his son was not at all athletic and that most boys would not want him on their team. But Shia's father understood that his son was chosen to play. It would give him a comfortable sense of belonging. Shia's father approached one of the boys in the field and asked if Shia could play. The boy looked around for guidance from his teammates. Getting none, he took matters into his own hand and said, "We are losing by 6 runs and the game is in the 8th inning. I guess he can be on our team and we'll try and put him in up to bat in the 9th inning. Shia's father was ecstatic as Shia smiled broadly. Shia was told to put on a glove and go out to play short center field. In the bottom of the 8th inning, Shia's team scored a few runs but was still behind by 3. In the bottom of the 9th inning, Shia's team scored again, and now with 2 outs and the bases loaded with the potential winning runner on base, Shia was scheduled to be up. Would the team actually let Shia bat at this junction and give away their chance to win the game? Surprisingly, Shia was given the bat. Everyone knew that it was all but impossible because Shia didn't even know how to hold the bat properly, let alone hit with it. However, as Shia stepped up to the plate, the pitcher moved a few steps to lob the ball softly so Shia should at least be able to make contact. The first pitch came in, and Shai swung clumsily and missed. One of Shai's teammates came up to Shai, and together they held the bat and faced the pitcher waiting for the next pitch. The pitcher again took a few steps forward to toss the ball softly toward Shai. As the pitch came in, Shai and his teammate swung at the bat, and together they hit a slow ground ball towards the pitcher. The pitcher picked up the soft grounder and could have easily thrown the ball to the first baseman. Shai would have been out, and that would have been the end of the game. Instead, the pitcher took the ball and threw it on a high arc to right field, far beyond reach of the first baseman. Everyone started yelling, "Shai, run to first! Run to first!" Never in his life had Shai run to first. He scampered down the baseline wide-eyed and startled. By the time he reached first base, the right fielder had the ball. He could have thrown the ball to the second baseman, who would tag out Shai, who was still running. But the right fielder understood what the pitcher's intentions were, so he threw the ball high and far over the third baseman's head. Everyone yelled, "Run to second! Run to second!" Shai ran towards second base as the runners ahead of him deliriously circled the bases towards home. As Shai reached the second base, the opposing shortstop ran to him, turned him in the direction of third base, and shouted, "Run to third!" As Shai ran third, the boys from both teams ran behind him, screaming, "Shai, run home!" Shai ran home, stepped on home plate, and all 18 boys lifted him on their shoulders and made him the hero, as he had just hit a grand slam and won the game for his team. "That day," said the father softly, with tears now rolling down his face, "those 18 boys reached their level of God's perfection."
Thank you, Marseille. That's a beautiful story. I first heard that story told by Dr. Wayne Dyer, and it's always been a favorite of mine. It chokes me up every time I hear it. Let's get back to the verse that was read by Jean, 1 Corinthians. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love does not envy or boast. It's not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoings, but rejoices with truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. You know, that's one of the most popular verses of the Bible. We hear it at weddings and anniversaries, and it's even been put to music. But you know, it's also the most taken out of context of any of the verses in the Bible. That verse was not meant to be beautiful or kind or inspiring. Paul wrote that to the Corinthians because he was angry at them for straying away from the church. He was chewing them out for going bad and losing their faith. The passages that I just read were not meant to be romantic or inspiring. They were meant to remind the Corinthians of what God's love was and how all love should be. Paul thought the Corinthians were so corrupt that they even forgot the meaning of God's love. You know, it's pretty incredible that verse has 15 verbs in it. To be patient, kind, does not envy, boast, arrogant, rude, or insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful or rejoice in wrongdoings. It rejoices in the truth. When I was young, I thought I was a pretty good person. I went to church most of the time, and I studied the Bible a little. I tried to obey the Ten Commandments, and I tried to teach others, to treat others like the way I wanted to be treated. But when I think about it, I didn't really feel that close to God. I mean, God was up here, and I was up here. I knew who God was, and I believed in God. But God and I were not best friends. I wanted to be best friends, but I didn't know how to do it. I wanted to feel close to God, but I didn't know how to feel close to God. But over the years, I've learned a few things that have helped me feel closer, a lot closer to God. Most are pretty simple things and have mostly to do with my attitude and acts of kindness like the ones that we just talked about. I can't tell you what would work for you, but I'll share with you the things that have worked for me. One of the first things was, about 35 years ago, I learned how to meditate. I really didn't know how powerful meditation was for me. It gave me a chance to communicate with God one-on-one. And it led to me feeling like God and I were best buddies. I felt like he was part of me. He became part of my skin. And meditation helps me in lots of other ways, too. If I can't sleep, I meditate a little bit about sleep, and boop, off to sleep I go. I've gotten so good at it, it's been over 20 years, but I've gotten so good at it that I can meditate almost any time. I can meditate while I'm driving my car. And if you learned it, you could do the same thing. It totally relaxes me. And I hope that if the people in this church would like to learn how to meditate, we can have a class on it and share it. The second thing that helped me a lot was to have an attitude of gratitude. Anybody that's had anything to do with program understands attitude of gratitude. That's part of program. I am so grateful for so many things I can't even list them. The Lord has given me everything. Everything I ever needed, the Lord gave to me. The third thing is that's brought me closer to God than anything else is probably the easiest thing to do. Random acts of kindness. That's all. Random acts of kindness. The opportunity to do so happens all the time, many times during the day. Let me give you an example. I was at the DMV. Oh, my God, how horrible experience that is. I was at the DMV renewing my license. And the lady in front of me was very frustrated because the pen that DMV provided didn't work. So I reached in my pocket and I gave her my pen. It was a cheap pen. I wouldn't miss it. I might have had more than one pen in my pocket anyway. And I gave her the pen. I didn't expect her to give it back. Lo and behold, a half an hour later, she found me and thanked me profusely for giving her the pen. It made my whole day. It made my whole week. It probably made my whole month. And kindness, not only given, comes back. 2 summers ago, I'm working the Bridgewater Fair in Bridgewater, Connecticut. I had a table and a booth and handing out flyers. It was a very, very hot day. And a woman from 2 booths down comes to me with a cold bottle of water, and she said, "Here, I thought you'd like this. It's hot out." She was from a booth that's selling water. She brought me a bottle for free just because she thought I would like a cold bottle of water. So the kindness that you give out comes back. And I'll give you another example that happened to me a couple weeks ago. Remember the snowstorm we had? I'm at Heinz Brothers in Salisbury getting my car filled up, and there's snow on my back window, and I see this brush brushing the snow off. I thought it was a gas station attendant. It wasn't. It was the guy behind me waiting to get gas. He took the brush out of his car, and he comes up and brushes off my window. That was a random act of kindness. It baffles me how often it happens. This acts of kindness, we have opportunities every day to give them. And you'd be surprised how you get 10 back for every one you give. You know, there was a back in the 1970s, most of you here are too young to remember that, but there was an old Alka-Seltzer ad that said, try it, you'll like it. And that's what I say about random acts of kindness. Try it, you'll like it. It brings you closer to God. It brings you closer to your neighbor. It brings you closer to yourself. It's a wonderful, beautiful thing. Amen.